Welcome back to Footwork, a podcast for those who dream big, never settle, and make their own path. I'm Sean.
And I'm Dylan. Together with guests, we share stories and tips every Monday to educate, inspire, and create a community built of soccer players and dream chasers.
Better to have a short life that is full of what you like doing than a long life spent in a miserable way.
Welcome to Footwork. So, Kyle McLagan, welcome to Footwork.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. We always start with the motto here, which is make your own path. And as someone who's played in multiple countries over the past years, what does making your own path mean to you?
I've wrestled with this question since you guys sent it to me. And I've listened to a few episodes before, of course. But making your own path to me is just, I just believe there's a path for everybody. It's not about comparing to other players. It's not about comparing to even to your past experiences. It's just about looking. It's just looking to the future and just seeing where things take you. Like I had a crazy experience where in COVID with Denmark, I couldn't find a team. You know, didn't know if I could stay there, and then 24 hours later I was in Iceland and signed a contract. So I like to say you're creating your own path, but sometimes it's just laid out for you and you're a bit of a passenger at certain points. So
almost like putting one foot in front of the other until you get there, right?
Yeah, like I've always just kind of kept my head down and kept moving forward, and I mean obviously things have always kind of worked out in the end, so yeah, there you have it.
And before we get into your story, tell us, who are you, where were you, and where are you going?
I'm Kyle McLagan. I'm a footballer, but much more than that. I'm somebody who enjoys adventures, likes to kind of seek the uncomfortable, as you'll kind of hear in my stories, I guess. Where have I been? From Kansas City, born and raised. Furman in Greenville, South Carolina for school. Denmark for my first contract, and now currently in Iceland. And then where I'm going, kind of like you heard from the answer before, not really sure. We'll kind of see how things play out, you know. Yeah,
exactly.
A bit of a limbo now, where running out of contract in October and currently injured. So, you know, we'll see.
And I think that puts you in a very unique perspective, kind of, you know, you've been established in Iceland, so we'll stay on the now, but, you know, coming into this next transfer window, being injured and kind of seeing what's next, how do you approach that mentally? And then what does it look like in terms of opportunities for you? Is it, do you feel there's fewer just because you're injured and you're not out there right now?
Definitely fewer, in my mind, at least. I'm very much a realist. Coming off an injury, you know, people aren't going to take a risk on you. I'm not coming from a position of power where I feel like I have some leverage, to go and I kind of have my ideas of what I want in a contract, just some check marks, but coming from a position of injury and not having played for a year, it's tougher to check those boxes. So it's an exciting time, a scary time. I've never really, like, since the start of my professional career, like, had much of a free agency period where I had no idea what was going to happen. And I'm not going to say I have no idea what's going to happen now. I very much want to stay with my current team, and my coach wants to keep me. It's just a matter of, putting two and two together, I guess, and sorting some things out. And also just a question of when that's going to happen. You know, are other people maybe going to come to the table in Iceland before my team? So a lot of question marks. It is a scary time ahead, but I'm also just kind of, I'm excited, intrigued.
Do you feel like you thrive sometimes in these kinds of situations? Because you said you kind of seek this discomfort, and it seems from your story, I mean, you know, coming out of high school, not really having been scouted as much as you probably would have liked for university, do you kind of thrive on that? Maybe it's proving people wrong or proving yourself right, but just kind of that underdog story in which you know that you're going to persevere with the determination.
100%. I have always kind of felt like an underdog. I don't know, maybe it's stupid to people listening, hearing that, like as a professional, but I've always felt I had a kind of a chip on my shoulder. And I've always, like I said, just kind of kept persevering, kept pushing forward. But yeah, I don't know, sometimes I thrive in chaos, but I'm getting to a point now, almost 28, where it's like, okay, let's err towards a little security now, you know? So,
There's no harm in thriving during chaos, though. I mean, if there's one place to thrive, it's there.
Yeah. See, I'm wrestling with that now at the minute. Like, you know, it's secure. It's, I'm not going to say easy, but it's the easier route maybe to stay in Iceland at the minute. But the reason I was playing in Denmark and the reason I went to Furman and the reason I came to Iceland is I'm a bit of an adventurer. Like I always thrive in new environments, always kind of crave new environments, new challenges. And I don't know, I'm leaning towards security at the minute, but in my nature maybe is an adventurer. So
it's a very interesting topic because Sean and I have always kind of felt the same, where there becomes a period where you feel like you need to step outside to grow more. But I also kind of, on the flip side, to play devil's advocate to ourselves, is, you know, learning how to keep thriving in an environment you've been in, I think, is also a challenge that I haven't been able to, I guess, master or even get close to mastering. Like I haven't gotten close to mastering when I've gone to new environments, but I would say I thrive better in that period where I'm like, I have to prove myself and do this. But in a position you've already done it, that's also kind of a new skill to learn.
Yeah. So my current team, we are the best team in Iceland. We're going to be the champions here, hopefully tonight. You know, we have, if we win, of course, Champions League the following year. And as a team who wins it the following year, you have a target on your back. So it's been very fun watching from the sidelines this year, but also very tough because I know the expectations of next year. Now, naturally, that as a healthy footballer, that wouldn't scare me. I welcome it. But the thoughts start to creep in as an injured player, you know, who's basically, I'm aiming to be fit by the start of the season. Now, can I come back and immediately find the pace of the league that I have played in before? Hopefully. But it's going to be a different challenge. Like, it's a different type of pressure than I've had in other clubs in other countries, like fighting for trophies. You know, sometimes if you put a foot wrong and it costs your team a goal or 3 points, like it's just a different pressure to play under.
Sure. And what about, I mean, speaking on that injury, how do you deal with when the doubts creep in? Because it's normal. We've all gone through injuries, and that always comes up as like, you start to begin like, oh, can I do this? Can I play it? Oh, it looks, the speed of play looks quick. Like, am I going to be able to do that? But while you're working through the rehab and the injury, before you're even getting back on the field, are there things that you've kind of worked through this recovery process that like, okay, this works, or I understand I'm feeling this now, but this is just like a moment and it's going to pass?
I've had doubts throughout my whole career, honestly. We'll kind of get into it when I get into like the start of Denmark, but I had 3-4 months where it was like, am I even good enough to be here? Like, do I deserve to be here? And then, I mean, even last season, you know, sometimes in training, it's like I'm feeling very low on the totem pole right now. Like sometimes the doubts creep in even when I'm healthy and playing. But now, yeah, of course they creep in. Like, you know, we brought in a player from Faroe Islands who basically replaced me in some sense of the word. And he's done very well. He's been the best signing of the summer, you know? So it's like, am I competing with him now? Am I competing with you know, is there more competition in my position? So the doubts have definitely crept in, but I've looked at football a different way since getting injured. It's not like I'm studying it more intently, but I just see the game differently. Maybe it's just from the sidelines, from a different perspective. Like, you know, in the stands, you just get a different view. You see all 22 players and in between the lines and, you know, how one movement, a counter movement, opens so much space for somebody, or like, you know, so basically what I'm getting at is I'm trying to improve Even if I'm not physically like improving on the ball, I'm trying to improve mentally and just, yeah, I understand the game and educate myself in another way. So that's how I'm trying to deal with the doubts. It'll be different doubts when I'm, you know, back in training, but it's kind of the nature of it, I guess.
Do you feel like they sometimes kind of cancel each other out because of the highs that you've been able to reach? Like, how often do those kind of cancel out the doubts? I mean, we'll get into it, you know, playing in Champions League, European League qualifiers and making a first tier European League when, you know, I'm sure a lot of people or, you know, a lot of people didn't expect that to happen. You know, does that reaching those highs, does that sometimes kind of squash the doubt?
I don't know where I heard it first, but I've just heard it over the years, not just footballers, but professional athletes in general, but like trying to just stay neutral through the highs and lows. Obviously, you know, you want to celebrate the wins and you have to learn something from the losses and the lows, but I've tried to remain neutral as much as I can. It's easier said than done, of course. But yeah, in some regards, like knowing that I've played against some of the best teams in Europe, like, yeah, it helps me to then come back to Iceland and play a team in our league, you know? So yes and no. It's a
relationship, right? Answer. It's waves. Yeah, but, it comes, it goes. That's the life of a footballer. And I'm sure in other sports too, is just,
yeah, I think just an athlete, honestly.
Yeah. It's never going to be the same coast for too long. But just like you said, kind of learning the tricks and tips to try and bring it back to as neutral as possible to take that next step each day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's just not cut and dry. Really is in sports.
Footwork.club, the official website for all things footwork, is now live.
Check out all Footwork podcast content, including episodes, guest features, and YouTube videos.
The Press, a section with written articles, interviews, and blogs from ourselves and guests.
Game Time, updates about our season in Germany and what's going on behind the microphone.
Want to Go Pro? Dedicated to helping soccer players follow their dreams with helpful info and our consultation sign-up. That's a free video call with us to connect and ask anything.
And of course, the Footwork Shop. We got some of the best merch around, as well as free PDF templates like a CV builder and much more.
So join the club at footwork.club.
And let's talk about some of the highs. I mean, Dylan mentioned it, playing in Champions League and Europa League qualifiers, playing in front of 20,000 in Poland. Walk us through that.
Man, like you said, I never really expected that in my career. Like, I never was like, oh, Champions League, you know, or, you know, it was always a dream, of course. Like, it was a dream to play professionals, a dream to play in these leagues. But when it became a reality, it's something different. But like, I don't know, you prepare for these games, I'm not going to say the same way as you would normally prepare for a game. There's definitely a lot more focus and a lot more emphasis on certain things, just from a team perspective and a personal perspective. But yeah, playing these games, like, oh, the first 5 minutes of playing in Lech Poznan in Poland, man, like 24,000 people, massive stadium. Like, I was like shaking a bit, like jumpy, you know.
I can imagine.
Nervous as hell, like, you know. So yeah, the highs have been quite high. And to be honest, I aim to take them higher. Our team aims to take them higher. By qualifying hopefully for group stages next year. But yeah, I mean, I can't, it's so tough to describe, like playing in front of 24,000 people. And a unique thing about the experience in Poland was we took this team to extra time on their pitch. They were in a bit of a rough stretch, like in the league, the fans weren't happy with the performances with the coach. So when we took them to extra time, like they were booing their own players and clapping us on, like it was crazy. So at the end of the game, like the wall behind the goal of their supers, their whole team was gathered in like the center circle, just getting absolutely berated, whistles, boos, like all this. And they just kind of like quickly left the pitch. And then they just started like clapping us on, and we were kind of all walking over to the wall, like, you know, a sign of mutual respect. But it was an unreal feeling. Like, we put everything we had out on the pitch in that moment, and you know, to get the recognition like on that level was kind of something different.
Did you feel throughout the game, did you ever have moments like, I know you said in the beginning it was kind of calming yourself down, maybe getting that heart rate off of the cliff, but during the game, did you ever kind of feel those moments of like, wow, like I've made it to this point?
Yeah, for sure. I don't know, like when we made it, we scored like 93rd minute to send this to extra time. So that feeling, honestly, me and my other center back, because we like ever since the 75th minute, we just kind of sent numbers forward. And it was basically like me and my other center back, maybe our six, like tracking back against like 5-on-3, basically.
Oh,
I was
God.
Dead. So we scored the 93rd minute, and me and my other center back dropped to our knees, like another 30 minutes of this. Oh my days. Like, how am I meant to do this? So like I got more tired in this game than I had in a lot of other games, mentally and physically. So once you kind of like experience that, you realize just like some of the levels, but you realize kind of how close you are to it as well. Like maybe just out of touch, just out of reach. But yeah, I mean, in that situation, like I knew I had reached a new high in my career, like, but you know, the feeling just immediately makes you hungry to experience it again. So
yeah, it's funny you say that. I mean, it's when you see what's possible, then it kind of resets and then it goes even higher. So after that game, I can imagine that you felt like, oh, I can do more than this. And before that, maybe you didn't feel like that, or you didn't see that or feel that way.
Yeah, definitely. At that point, that was the second leg against them. So we actually beat them on our home pitch, which was another crazy feeling. Beat them 1-0, and it was kind of like, we can do this. Like, you know, you kind of feel on top of the world, but playing in their stadium on their home ground was just something different. It's crazy.
And how about winning some silverware in Iceland? How does that kind of rank up there, and walk us through those celebrations? I'm sure they were fantastic.
Yeah, definitely a high. Last year was mixed emotions. We didn't do so hot in the league because we put so much of an emphasis on Europe. But getting to the cup final, everybody kind of had this eerie feeling like, okay, we can rescue the season a little bit. Because the way my team performed, even when I got here in the last 5 years, we've been fairly dominant. Like, this is the fourth cup win in a row that we just won last week, and 5 years in a row. So there's, with the winning comes the expectations, of course, of the club, of the fans, of the coaches, the team. So last year, not doing so well in the league, we did well in Europe, but like I said, we were kind of just out of touch of accomplishing what we wanted, of reaching our goals. Like, we put up a hell of a fight against Malmo, we put up a hell of a fight against Poznan, but we came away with not much to show for it. And then obviously in the league, we didn't perform as we should have, as we could have. So winning the cup and making it to the cup final, even, like, you kind of felt like, okay, we have something to at least stamp this season as a success.
Right.
And yeah, and then, I mean, the cup final itself, playing in front of, I think we had 7,000-8,000 people in the National Stadium of Iceland, like, another big game, but, you know, it was a great feeling. Yeah, I don't know how else to describe it. Like, winning a trophy is not something I necessarily like expected to have the opportunity in my career, you know?
Yeah.
Especially going to Denmark in the second tier, like, yeah, you can win that league, but, you know, win promotion, whatever. But I never really thought like winning trophies was going to be truly like within reach in my career. So actually getting to play for those trophies and win those trophies was something else.
Speaking on those, I mean, you spoke about some of the pressures and demands of kind of playing for a club who's had the success. Can you speak on some of the pressures, the demands, and the style that is required of you in Iceland?
I think my team, along with maybe two or three others, have quite different demands than the rest of the league. The direction of the league is going in the right way, but there are three or four that kind of conduct themselves differently, more professionally. I'm not going to say, for lack of a better term, they do more professionally, is how these clubs are run. But yeah, like I kind of went away from the question, but the expectations of playing in this team are quite high, just like within the club itself. My coach played on the highest level. He played in the Prem, played in Eredivisie, played in France. Like, the way he sees football, the way he sees the team, the way he sees, like, yeah, just the game in general. Like, he has expectations. He has high expectations. Like, even sometimes when we win, it's like, okay, were we really good enough in this game just to, like, to say that we played how we wanted, like, how we drew up the game, the tactics and everything. So, yeah, just the pressure. I've been on both sides, like the pressure of facing relegation versus the pressure of playing for the first place or for a trophy every game. It's just different. But we have very high expectations in our club, to perform and to do all the small things right, despite, this is another conversation, not even being technically full-time professional. Yeah, it was kind of a roundabout, not so answer, but
that's a podcast. Dive in
there. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot to dive into here. So first off, style of play. What is the style of play in Iceland in your eyes? And maybe is the style of play your team and a few others much different than the rest of the league?
I would say, yeah. The top two or three play some beautiful football. We actually have a team, Breiðablik, who are in the group stages of Conference League. They play some good football, some very good players. The team that we kind of competed with and pulled away from, Valur, in second, they have some old professionals, some Aaron Johansson. They have some old professionals who just are very good players. They understand the game and, like, they play good football. But as you start to get lower, maybe in the table, it becomes a scrap. Like, the realities of Iceland and sometimes the weather can very much affect the game, because it can be very windy. It can be some, you know, pissing down rain. But I think there is a lot of individual and a lot of quality in general in Iceland. And I think a lot of people just don't understand that. You hear Iceland, tiny country. Maybe you relate that to 2016 and 2018, the Euros and all that. I just think it's kind of underestimated in Iceland, but we have some quality players, some quality teams, and the football is quite good. But in terms of styles of play, yeah, the lower teams, it can get to be, they just try and make it physical. Some of the tougher games to play are on, like, some grass pitches away, where Akranes, for example, is a kind of a lower end team in the recent years. They have a dry grass pitch. It's always windy there, and they just make it a battle. And that is not the style of play not the style that we play, but also not the style that we match up particularly well against, or didn't last year. This year, we definitely have dealt with it better. So there can be some more physical aspects, like in kind of the lower games or depending on the weather. But the type of football that we play is very much like a Man City, even a Brighton. Now we watch a lot of film with Brighton, the way De Zerbi is having these guys play. We build a lot with three in the back, usually two sixes, and usually 3-2-5 is kind of our buildup. Heavy emphasis on possession for us. Sometimes there's games where you can't play that. Yeah, right, exactly. It turns into a dog fight, but that's again a roundabout answer.
Yeah. And you just mentioned before too that it's not full time despite it being professional. What do you mean by that?
It's something that annoys me about Iceland. But they only refer to professional, like, if you leave Iceland, you become a professional, which is so annoying to me. Like, some guy not anybody in particular, can go to the third tier in Sweden. It's like, oh, he's gone to play professionally abroad. And it's like, it's just a small mentality to me. A bit like, we have a team in the group stages in our league, but it's considered part-time football because everybody trains in the afternoon, barring one team, I think. Mm-hmm. My team, we don't have many people who work, but some of the lower teams definitely do, people who work full-time jobs, and then usually training's at 5. So in that sense, yeah, it's not professional where we're training in the morning and you're getting meals at the club and, like, you know, there's like a big big group around, like, the team, like, of administrators and everything, but it's definitely going that direction. But yeah,
is that from the Icelandics perspective, or there's also, you've encountered from people outside of Iceland, they say, oh, it's not professional there?
I mean, if you come here as a foreigner, you're professional. You're paid as a professional. Totally. Like, you view it as a professional. So that's why it kind of pisses me off, because I'm a professional. My team are full of professionals, but
right.
In the media, it's like, you have to go abroad to be professional. It's just like, all right, like.
Oh, so in Iceland, they're saying you have to go abroad to be a professional.
Yeah, that's kind of the view. That has been the view as of recent. The money's gotten better here. The football's gotten better and everything. So it's definitely going in the right direction. We just are kind of like, I say we. It's just kind of on a cliff's edge where, like, we need a little push for teams to start.
Right. It's still in the early stage.
Actually, yeah, going into becoming a professional league.
It's crazy that there is a team in the European or in conference league qual, right, or conference league group stage, and the league is not seen as professional within the country. Could you imagine there was, like, a team in the group stages from America? I mean, the league and every league below and above it would be professional, you know? Like,
yeah. I mean,
jump on that word.
So yeah, the team in the group stages, I would consider them professional. Like, I would consider us professional. I would consider one or two other they call it semi-professional or, like, part-time, because, you know, in some teams you need to work, and they just allow other people to work full-time jobs and then play football. Like, I don't know, that's just kind of been, like, the culture of Icelandic football for so long that it's just kind of accepted.
Yeah, it's so interesting too, because I had a teammate that he played in the Faroe Islands, which is kind of, seems to me, it's just like a smaller version of the Icelandic league.
Yeah.
And there, everyone plays, everyone works because everyone's working, but it's still professional. So they're just working to make extra money, and because they have their mornings off. But yeah, it's like the league's not as good as Iceland. The teams I don't think are as good, but it's the same style. It's like they just all work because there's nothing else to do.
Yeah. I mean, that's a decent way to look at it. Like, you know, it definitely helps. Everybody on my team then can kind of earn, like, their money in some ways. Like, some guys don't need to work in my team. Plenty of guys don't need to work in my team, but they do because they can, and why not?
Right. So,
yeah. But with Breidablik kind of making it to the group stages and the ambitions we have and some of the money in a couple other clubs, like, I believe in the next 5 to 7 years, like, there'll be, you know, half the league will be like full-time professionals where they're training in the mornings, but that's my hopes, I guess.
Yeah.
Time will tell.
Time will tell is right. Yeah. Exactly. And let's go back to proving people wrong. So going into college, you were basically a walk-on and then eventually earned a scholarship and then turned into a career playing Champions League, Europa League qualifiers. What was that like, first of getting into college or not getting into college as a footballer and walking onto a team and then becoming a starter?
For me, like, basically up until 17, 18, like junior, senior year of high school, like, football was kind of just, I loved football. I loved playing football. I loved watching football, but, like, it was kind of just more of a social thing for me. I played every sport a ton up in 15. Then I focused on football, and I don't know, like, yeah, it was always more social for me. So, like, when I started to think about college and started to, like, have some real success in high school, my junior and senior year, like, I knew that I wanted to play, like, around that time, but I didn't know how to go about it. And then I just didn't get a lot of interest. I wasn't like, I was on a team that wasn't really affiliated with any club. I'd kind of missed my window on the academy, for yeah, reasons won't get into, but missed the window there. So I wasn't like on, we were a serious team. Like we wanted to win. We were winning state championships, but not as serious where like a lot of the guys had these ambitions to play in college. So when I turned to college, like I don't know if I just didn't know how to go about it or I was just late to the game, but like I just didn't get any interest besides like kind of local D3, couple D2, but I kind of just like I just had in my mind, I guess, like I'm going to D1 or I'm just not gonna play football. I think at some point like I kind of just said, yeah, maybe I just won't even play. I don't know why. And I think I was just being stubborn and I was like, I want to go to Division One, whatever. Eventually it kind of yeah, just came down to I went to Furman to one of their like summer camps, did well, and then they had some interest, but it was kind of like Furman's an expensive school, 60 grand a year. So like, it was cool to have some interest. They couldn't really offer me any money. And then I also went to Creighton. They were kind of interested, but I didn't get any money anywhere. So I was kind of like, I don't know. I had some, my parents can attest to this. I had some tough nights at our dinner table, just sitting there, like not knowing what the hell I wanted to do, where I wanted to go. Like I knew I wanted to go away from home, but I didn't really know what it would look like. And I can't even say like I had a definitive time where I like made a decision. I think I just kind of had a gut feeling with Furman and yeah, and rolled with it, and then kind of just showed up, not really sure. Like I put in the work, of course. Like I've always been a workhorse, I guess, yeah, for lack of better words. But like I put in the work and went into Furman ready. I just didn't really know what to expect. They didn't know what to expect of me. Just had like a walk-on spot, like you said, and I just kind of I grew into it. Similar to when I first arrived in Denmark, like I kind of alluded to, when I first got to Furman, I went in the summer because we had like captains trainings and everything, and I kind of just felt like very much out of place. I was like, oh, okay, am I good enough to even be here? Kind of grew into it. Got a few minutes in my first 4 or 5 games, and then just kind of got lucky. There was not lucky. Somebody got injured. So a little lucky on my part, I guess, but I stepped into a position where I got the starting spot and kind of just never really looked back. But yeah, I don't know. I never really like I loved football at that point. Like I loved playing it, but I was never like on this serious path where it was like, some of these academy kids are now where it's like I have to go do this and like go to a top program, like, cause that's the only way to get to professional. Like I never really, I'm not gonna say I didn't see a path, but like I guess that wasn't in the forefront of my thinking.
I mean, you prove that there's multiple paths and there's multiple ways to get there. So, I mean, for you and for Sean and I as players who also kind of did a lot of the combine routes, how was that experience for you after college and kind of getting into that first contract afterwards?
Oof, I had a rude awakening my first combine. For yeah, whatever reason, the draft, I don't even know if I like I was eligible for the draft, but I don't think I applied for the draft. I don't think I did any of this paperwork. I was naive, I guess, but also I don't think I got much help from my coach in that aspect, but something else there. So he sent me to Charlotte, to Independence for like an open, not open, it was an invite combine. And I went there with another player from my team. And I don't know. I don't know if I wasn't prepared. Played the first day and I didn't even get invited back to the second day. And it was kind of like, oh, okay. So yeah, professional is a different level. And then I went to a couple other, I can't even remember the order of it, but I went to an open tryout for Oklahoma City. Like this was a proper open tryout on some
Different
like
cross
youth
courts.
grass pitches, and all this. And I don't know, I just kind of went and played and enjoyed it. And ended up getting, I think I was one of three that got invited to preseason with OKC. Did I say Thunder earlier? No, Energy. There you go.
Close, yeah, very close.
Yeah, same thing. So I got invited to preseason there. And I think at this point, like I said, Charlotte kind of gave me an awakening. So I knew I had to switch mentality. I did switch mentality. And I went into this preseason, like, again, I don't know. I didn't have any expectations. I didn't know what was going to come of it. Like, I didn't even know how this level was going to be. So I went there and I did fairly well. I survived the first round of cuts, kept growing in confidence, growing into the team and into the environment, survived like the second round of cuts. And then kind of, I think, so that was like a week and a half. And then, come like the second week, end of the second week, we played a friendly, and the coach kind of pulled me aside and he said, "Hey, you know, we actually like what we're seeing with you. We see some potential in you." But I think it came down to, like, they had a guy from, I don't know, Europe or Africa, coming in and basically was having some visa issues. He was a center back as well. And if he, like, got his papers through, then, you know, they didn't have a spot for me, didn't have money for me. So, and he never really said, like, "Oh, if it's not this guy, it's you," you know, but he kind of said, "Then we'll kind of keep you around and see how it goes." So unfortunately played this friendly, I think like the weekend, or this was on like a Friday. So on Monday or Sunday, got a call like, "Yeah, this guy's coming in. You can stay and train with us," type of thing, "but we don't have a spot for you. We don't have, a roster spot or money for you," basically. So yeah, went back home at that point, and I don't really remember. My family is fairly well connected in the footy community in Kansas City, but somehow I landed in Swope Park Rangers, which was the USL team for Sporting. I went on a 2-week trial there, but basically they had just drafted Graham Smith from Denver. Just signed my friend Matt Lewis. These are both center backs, by the way, on homegrown contract. And then they had Dakota Barthanon.
Dakota Barnathan.
Barnathan, yeah. Not Barthanon, Barnathan, yeah. they had him on the roster, and then they had like another youth, like a U19 guy they were trying to bring through. So I went on a 2-week trial there, did fairly well, but there was never really like the opportunity for me to actually like get into this team. So just a good experience. And then basically at that point, this was like start of March and start of the season. And it was kind of like, well, there goes my window kind of thing. So, it was sitting at home thinking, all right, well, what's next? And, basically I decided to go down to Dallas. I have family in Dallas. So I went and lived with my aunt. And I trained with this guy named Peter Lucian. He's actually the assistant in FC Dallas now. But former French international, played in Atletico Madrid, and, you know, unreal career and knowledge of the game. So I went down and it was like, all right, I'm going to go train with this guy and I'll find a team, whatever. So I ended up, had a couple of friends from Furman in an NPSL team down there called the Fort Worth Vaqueros. And I was just like, all right, this is a place to play, a place to train, and kind of we'll just see what happens. Like I had no real timeline. I had no idea like what I was doing. I was just like, all right, I'm just going to keep playing type of thing. I had graduated, so I didn't have to worry about that. But yeah, I was just training with this guy and training with the team and playing and living at my aunt's. I wasn't earning any money, I don't think, doing anything. So basically just kind of being a degenerate. Like I had no plan, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I just on Instagram, AX Soccer Tours popped up. It was a guy I recognized. One of my friends played with him at West Virginia. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. You know, like trial in front of European coaches type of thing. At first, I was just kind of like, yeah, sure. You know, come pay. I think it was like $500 or something at the time. Like, come play in front of these coaches and we'll send you to Europe. And I was like, okay, yeah. Anyways, reached out to my friend who played with him, and then got in contact with Steven James was his name, and he kind of just said, "Yeah, look, they might have an opportunity for me in Sweden. Like, I can kind of put you in contact, but it's not like, you know, it's not like the scam, whatever that you're thinking it is." I was like, "Okay." Once I kind of got the word of approval from somebody that I respected or trusted, it was kind of like, "Okay." He put me in touch. This was literally, I think, 4 days before this tryout started in Austin. And I kind of just like got in touch with the guy. I was like, "Hey, I got a place to stay. I have a friend in Austin. Like, can I just come to this thing? I'm not going to pay $500, but can I just come?" And he was like, "Yeah, come on. Just whatever. Just come down." So I went to this, and it was a tryout. You know, anybody can pay to do it. So I got there, and it was just kind of like, oof. Okay. After the first day of training, it was like, not sure what could come of this. Kind of based on the level of the first day. We played four the next 2 days after that. And I kind of just was enjoying it. After the first day, like I said, I was kind of like, don't think much is going to come from this. So just playing, enjoying it, having fun, meeting people, just kind of being myself. I think I even like, Before the last day, I was staying with some family friends, and I had like a couple margaritas the night before. Like, maybe not the best to say that,
man, but that's a recipe for success.
Yeah, but I was just kind of like, all right, I don't see the path here. And then at the end of it, my coach of or technical director of the club that I eventually ended up in Denmark was like, "Yeah, we're interested in you, and we'd love to have you to Denmark." And I was like, "Yeah, okay. Sure, when?" This is in like April, end of April. And I'm like, okay, I know the season's ending. Like, they're not going to rush me out now. Like, why would they do that? So, okay, I got the summer. Yeah, whatever type of like, yeah, I'm sure I'll hear from you type of thing. Yeah. Then Alex, the guy who ran AX at the time, kind of reached out and just said, "This team's interested. They want you on trial." And I was like, "Sure. Okay. Are we just thinking after the summer? Like, do I have the summer to prepare?" He's like, "No, I think they want you there next week." And I was like,
"Oh,
next week." I was like, "Oh, my days. Okay. Good thing I've been training. Good thing I've been staying fit." Yeah. That's definitely one like attribute to my success. I was still playing. I was still keeping fit. Like, I was always ready. So yeah, I went to Denmark on a 2-week trial, and they liked me enough to keep me around. But that's a long-winded answer. Like, I got a bunch of no's before. And I expected nothing from this AX soccer, like after the first day, yep. Expected nothing from it. And I got a bit lucky. Like, it's a shit way to say it, but a little bit of luck in this field, in this career, like can jumpstart a career. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, but it's also kind of, it's where you're lucky in a sense where, you were seen at this time and at this moment, but you're putting yourself that summer through so many different opportunities and through so many different eyes. So it's also kind of like, because, I mean, it's tough. We get asked about combines by players all the time. And, we tell them, like, open tryouts, it's kind of tough because a lot of them can be money grabs. There are some good companies, there's some not so good companies out there from our experience, what we've heard. But it's also kind of like when you have nothing and you want something, it's getting yourself in front of as many eyes as possible so that, like, if you're prepared like you were, you were ready at the time, that can kind of meet and create a moment where you can get that luck and then get that opportunity. It's very tough to tell someone, yeah, do combines or don't do combines, but that's kind of the story of it.
Yeah. It's also, sometimes I just feel bad, like, when people ask me, like, how did you get to this point and what can I do? It's like, well, I just went to a bunch of different combines, like, and tryouts, and I got lucky at some point, like, yeah. But and I won't get into it too much because it's a question later, but it's kind of my mantra, like, that leads into this, like, create your own luck. I was staying fit. I was waiting for the opportunity, and then the opportunity came and I took it. So, you didn't see a lot of the 6 months of of training leading up to it, but well, okay, 6 months of training after school, but basically year right. of playing and everything. But yeah, at some point, like, something's going to happen, your opportunity is going to come, and you got to be ready to take it.
Yeah, for sure. And your opportunity does come in Denmark, where you go on trial there. And I believe they were kind of like in the midst of a relegation battle, right?
Yeah, I was on the plane with another guy to Denmark, and I'd done my research, and they had like 3 games left in the season and needed, I think, 4 points to avoid relegation. But like, I was just sitting on the plane thinking like, oh my days, man, I'm going to be walking into like hostile environment. Like, who
you would Denmark, think?
Yeah, who in Denmark like wants 2 guys from the U.S. on trial with like the 3 most important games of the season left? Like, these guys aren't going to be like, oh, our saviors. They're going to be like, who the hell are these guys and why are they here? You know? But I did not find that at all, thankfully. Everybody was super welcoming, like super kind, super accommodating. Everybody spoke English really well. Like, they fit you into conversations. Like, they included you in things. You know, I never really felt like isolated or like unwelcomed. So, yeah, I can't thank the Danish people and culture enough for that. But it could have been, yeah, could have been a lot worse. Again, got a little lucky, but
sure. And the adjustment period for first when you went to Denmark that first season, you made 16 appearances, some of those just off the bench. But then the following season, you played in 30, most of those starting. I assume there was a big learning curve, or just getting used to the culture or style of play, because that's a big jump in game time, because it was significant. It was like a triple the amount of game time I saw. So
yeah,
how was that first, I guess, the first few games where you're fighting this relegation battle, and then that first full season?
Yeah, so it's a tale of two very different stories. My first season to my second. My first season, we were full-time professional. Had some very quality players, paid some good wages, trained in the morning, breakfast, lunch, very professionally ran. My second season, we got a new owner. We can get into that. We had a bankruptcy scare, like 24 hours from everybody being like free, whatever. So we got a new owner for my second year, and we went part-time. And this guy kind of just tried to play like Moneyball in real life and built a little bit of a team that wasn't necessarily at the level for that league. So I benefited, of course, because then I went from kind of being on lower on the totem pole to being one of the first on the team sheet, kind of. So that's kind of the short answer of how the game time tripled. But as for the adjustment period, I had a very tough adjustment period, honestly, in Denmark. Like, they kept me because they saw the potential in me, from a physical aspect, I believe, but not so much from the technical. And I think, I believe Denmark and Danish football is very technical. They like to build out from the back. They like to play. So for me, it was a very big adjustment technically. College, I got away with technique because I was fast, strong, and that was the college game. I won aerial duels. I could jump and just win the physical battles, but I had a very sharp and steep learning curve when it got to Denmark. Like, my first 4 months, I just struggled with like, man, I'm not even sure I deserve to be here. I'm one of the worst 3 in training. Like, just feeling like I was up against the world at times. And obviously, like, I went away for school 16 hours away, but like, it's not a different country. It's not, you know, a foreign country. There's no language barrier at school. So like, I didn't have any real trouble adjusting culturally in school, of course. But when I got to Denmark, like, you're on your own a bit. You're in another country. You don't understand the language. You can communicate with everybody. I got lucky again there. Like, Denmark, everybody speaks English. I could speak to anybody, full conversation on the street. So thankful for that. But yeah, the adjustment period and what was expected of me from a footballing sense was a lot more than I'd ever been asked of before. Our coach was very demanding. He's a very hard-nosed, stoic coach, and he was the same type of player. He played in FCK for 15 years, something like that. But yeah, he knew I wasn't ready. I quickly found out I wasn't ready. But I eventually like adjusted. I grew into the team, into the football, into the technical and tactical aspect, and eventually earned his trust enough to get some minutes in the fall. I got my first start, I think like November, like one of the last 4 or 5 games of the season. I actually scored in this game. We beat the third place team like 7-2, I think. Scored 5 minutes into this. Benched for the next week, by the way. Yeah,
That's harsh.
Yeah, it was harsh, but to be fair, I replaced the captain. I was never just going to outright replace him.
Right.
My coach even came to see me in the gym. I think like we played on a Sunday, and I had like a Monday regen session, and I was just in the gym. He said, "Ah, Kyle, you know, I was very impressed, and you know, honestly, kind of surprised by your performance." And I was like, "Oh, thank you." Like Danish are very blunt. Just come out. And he was like, "Yeah, you know, some people would just think that you'd go into the team sheet into the 11 next week, but you know,
but
that's not going to happen." Type of thing. So I was like, "Well, okay,
you know, credit to him. It's good coaching."
Yeah, come out. Yeah, I mean, I felt I proved myself. I proved to myself, to him, and to my teammates in some aspect that like I do belong here. I can play here. You know, I'm not going anywhere. So, yeah. So then in the spring, I eventually just gained his trust, and I started getting more consistent minutes. And I'm very proud of that year when I look at it from a whole, because my first 3 months, I was like the lowest of the lows. Like, you know, close to like on the edge of tears sometimes when I went home, because football was my whole life at this point. Like, you know, you have a bad training, like you feel below something, like it just affects your day. It's something I've learned to cope with better. Still not great at it, but getting there. But yeah, to look at like the first 3 months and how that went, and then look at the last 3 months of that year, like I'm quite proud of myself and the progress, the development, and just like how I grew as a footballer and a person at that time. But then, yeah, like I said, the second year, new owner came in. We kept like 5 of the same players of like 26 from the first year.
Oh, wow.
So we kept 5. Yeah, my whole like role in the team got flipped on its head. I kind of went into a bit of a leadership role and being one of the more experienced players on the team. And yeah, I played a lot of games at that level. I learned a lot of things about myself, but we were just in a relegation battle the whole time. And, you know, we never really gained any ground on like staying up. So it was a tough year in that aspect, but also personally, I felt I did well and felt I established myself in the league and got some good minutes and some quality experience for my career. But yeah, that explains the 3 times the amount of playing time.
Sure. Yeah.
Again, a little lucky.
I mean, speaking on that adaptation period, I was going to ask just how you look back at it. And it's really cool to see like that you say that you're proud about it and how you kind of came through it. So for people, I guess players especially, kind of in similar situations where that adaptation period is kind of taking over and there's that cloud, what are some ways that you feel like helped you in those moments? And then also looking back, you know, with all of this learning from it and the experience now, what are some things that you kind of wish maybe you had done to help in that moment?
Oof. What I wish I had done, I wish I'd been better about like, I have a mental coach now. I wish I was more aware that was like a possibility. I wish I had that from the start, because that would have changed a lot of things rather than just kind of learning on my own about myself. But again, I also wouldn't trade that. Like, I wouldn't trade those 6-8 months where I learned a lot about myself and all that. In terms of dealing with it, man, That's a tough answer. Like, kind of like I said before, I've always just kind of kept my head down and kept moving. Like, that's just how I've gotten to where I am. So there was some aspect of that, but then, yeah, another big aspect actually was like culturally just leaning into that. I learned a lot about Denmark. I got into personal relationships with my teammates. Whenever my team, like, we didn't do it often, but whenever we would have like an outing where, we were going as a team somewhere, I was always there. They love net cafes and going to like computer cafes and playing Counter-Strike in Denmark. I
Really
never played
interesting.
Counter-Strike in my life.
So it really leaned into Counter-Strike.
Yeah, like they were like, "Oh, we're gonna go to the net cafe," and I was like, "What the hell's a net cafe?" I'm like, "Oh, we play Counter-Strike." "What the hell's Counter-Strike?" Okay. And they were like, "Yeah, we're going like 10 of us." And it's like, "All right, I'm in. I mean, I'll go learn, and why not? Like, what else am I gonna do? I'm not gonna go home and sit at home. Like, I'm gonna go hang out with my teammates, form some relationships, and like just lean into it." And that was one of my favorite parts about being abroad is like experiencing different cultures and seeing how other people live their lives. So I leaned into that, and I think that played a big part in my adjustment and in like into dealing with things. Like, I then, with the relationships I formed, I was able to talk about how I was in training with my teammates and like kind of hear some of their perspectives about me as a player and all that. And I realized like how much I kind of kicked myself down at times rather than like moved forward, like kept moving forward. So it's, yeah, a tough answer, but I kind of just dealt with it. I don't know. Like,
Yeah.
I just did it.
I mean, I want to stay on the saying yes thing because this is something that we brought up before, and I heard it on a podcast a long time ago when I was first beginning my travels. It's like when you're in a foreign country, this was not an athlete, but you can put it into our situation. Is like when you go to a foreign country like yourself, you went to Denmark, when your teammates invite you to go somewhere,
Do it.
always do it. There's of course exceptions, and of course maybe they're not doing the right thing, you shouldn't do it, but 99 out of 100 times you will be happy that you went, because now you form a relationship with these people, you realize that a lot of them just turn off their football brain completely and they just want to hang out, and they just want to hang out with you because you're American and you're foreign and you're new and practice their English, whatever it is, wherever you are. But it's like then you realize, okay, like look, I have friends, it's not just teammates. I was like, oh, these guys are my friends. We can go play Counter-Strike, which is kind of funny. But either way, it's just doing something and just hanging out with them. And in the beginning, I definitely even I did it in Mongolia, but then in Germany, in the beginning, I kind of didn't do it. And I realized that once I did start to hang out with my teammates, or there was just a few of them, when I would go hang out with them, it was just so much happier. You go to training, and now it's not just like, oh, you see him at training. Like you could talk about stuff with them or talk about whatever. And it really changed my experience. In the beginning in Germany, it was maybe a little rough. And after a few months, it was so much better because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't re recommend it enough. I still do it to this day. Like, anytime somebody's like, "Oh, we should know," even just after a game, go grab a beer. Yeah, I'm in. I'm there. But then also kind of a moving a little bit away from that, like, and kind of what you mentioned, like turning your football brain off. Like, when I first got to Denmark, it was kind of like a moment in my life where it was like, okay, like football is my life. That's all I'm doing right now. I can put 100% of my effort to football. I was pumped about it. Like, this is like the first time, like, I can put everything I own, not worry about school, all that. I came to realize pretty quickly that like that drains you. Like I said, like focusing on training is one thing, but then taking training home and thinking about it there really kind of like, yeah, killed me. So being able to turn that off and like enjoy life outside of football became like a very important aspect of life abroad for me. And not, I mean, I'm sure it's the same back home even. But yeah, like, just those social encounters and times where you can not even have to worry about training or game or mistakes you made, like it changed everything for me. Once I kind of realized that.
I kind of thought of this phrase the other day when I was thinking, I was talking a little bit about this obsession period as an athlete and how it can kind of take over you, but also like when you use it to its strengths, obviously it can get you to places you never thought. And that was just kind of calculated obsession. So it's like knowing when to be obsessed with the sport and to make yourself better, and then knowing when to just try and completely flip that off, because that's bringing the obsession home. It sometimes can be good. You know, you can analyze, you can kind of see the sport from a different view, but when it becomes everything, that's when it becomes like the shoulders are too heavy. And then it's always kind of like,
at some point,
it's detrimental. And then that's when you get into a lot of the things where you're always looking at something from, how did I do in this view? Like, oh, I made this mistake. I made this, I did this. When the team game, like when you spoke to your teammates, you kind of saw from their point of view that maybe you're being too hard on yourself. And that's kind of bringing yourself out of it. I mean, watching game film or kind of thinking of games back, I still do it a lot, but I've gotten better at it, is just knowing that the game doesn't revolve around me. And I mean, that can just be ego sometimes, or just you have high expectations of yourself. But just knowing that every mistake that you made is not how everyone is thinking in the stadium, or how your coaches or how your teammates are thinking, because everyone's making mistakes.
It depends on the mindset as well. I think at that time in my career, I was focusing a lot on the negatives. Maybe because there were more negatives than positives at that time, but my obsession became in the mistakes I made, and that was not healthy. Of course,
that's the flip. That's a big flip side of it, is right. When the obsession takes over into everything and everything negative, and then it's tough to flip that switch when it gets to that point.
Yeah, but I will say, like, the whole time I was not doing well in training, I was in the gym, I was in early, I was doing the right things to improve, but I just had so much more of a focus on the mistakes, and that was definitely like where the issues lie.
Mm-hmm. Right. Plays a role in your confidence and all that.
For sure.
And then, I mean, from there, I guess we jump right into making the move to Iceland. How was that transition to then going to another new country, new league, new culture? Did you kind of take what you learned in Denmark and brought it there?
I definitely did. I also came to Iceland at a weird time. It was right on the heels of COVID. Not even heels. It was mid-COVID. I finished my contract in Denmark. We got relegated. Didn't know if there was going to be a league. Didn't know when the league was going to start. All this, and kind of like, there were too many question marks. I couldn't afford to pay for an apartment without income. I couldn't afford to eat without income. And it kind of just like forced me to make a move. I just had some connections in Iceland that I relied on, and jumped on that. Had a little bit of a plan. Like, I went to a team in the second tier in Iceland initially. Their season runs basically the USL schedule, like March to, well, April, May to October. So there were like 7 games left, and I went there, and it was just kind of like, okay, I'll promote with this team and play a year, and then I'll be right again in the football world and I'll move on. But that was not the case. I'm still in Iceland. So
hardly ever goes the plan, though, does it? Hardly ever goes the plan.
Yeah. But I don't know. Like, Denmark and Iceland, there can be like cultural differences. There are cultural differences, of course, but like, when you're in a country that speaks English so well, and like, just the Scandinavian countries speak English so well, and like the quality of life is so good, and like, there's not much to worry about in life here. So like, it wasn't a massive transition for me. Even US to Denmark, there were obviously some changes, some differences, but like, then Denmark to Iceland, like, I didn't feel like there were many changes. But again, I got to know my teammates, and I had a good roommate, Fred, who I really enjoyed playing with, living with, and everything. So that definitely made the transition easier. But I think in this situation, I dropped down in levels, kind of, in a sense, without, like, you know, taking away from Icelandic football. I dropped down in a level, and I think at that point, much more confident in my abilities. So I kind of came in to Iceland, to my team, with a different attitude of just like, all right, I'm kind of the guy, you know, like I have the confidence. I believe in myself and I know my ability. So that definitely, like, as much as I don't like to let it, football affects everyday life. So at that point I was in a winning team. I was playing well. I scored some goals. Like, it made the adjustment period so much easier. Yeah, just kind of
it spills over so easily in terms of the winning and losing and the performances. And that's it's a skill I'm sure we're all kind of learning every day. It might have gotten better throughout our careers, but it's still like so far from being able to separate the two.
Yeah, it's, you can definitely improve in that aspect, but I don't think you can really like master it. Obviously, being on both sides, fighting relegation and playing for trophies, like when you're winning, life's just better. The water tastes better. Like the sky is bluer. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, everything's going to plan when you're winning. Everything couldn't be better.
Especially just as a competitor.
Yeah, I mean, so when you were in Iceland and on that first team, and then making the transition into where you are now, did you was that part of kind of the plan, was to work your way up as quickly as possible and get noticed by, you know, a team that was one of the best in Iceland, if not the best?
Yes and no. Like when I first came to Iceland, it was finish the season with this team, promote, play in the first tier, prove my level and kind of move on. When we didn't promote, which is kind of a crazy story, we had like, I think 7 or 8 games left in the league, in third place, top two promoted. And then we got down to the last 3 games, I think, 2 or 3 games. We played the first place team still. Like, that was one of the games, one of the 3. Tied on points in second, and they canceled the league. Canceled the league, 3 games left in a promotion battle. Like,
holy shit.
Yeah, I could not believe it. Then they sent the other team up because they had a better goal difference.
Wow.
By like 2 or 3, not even joking.
Was there like protests? Was there like, how did this? Because that's crazy.
I was ready to protest and go like to do whatever I had to do to like,
I'm sure,
fix that. But I kind of just went home and I kind of let them deal with it. There were like some lawsuits and stuff, but like nothing really ever like that I saw. I was outside of Iceland at the time when all of this was kind of going down. Like, there wasn't a whole lot that I saw that like was ever going to change, I guess. So basically I'd only played 6 games in Iceland. I didn't have any sort of like resume or profile in the league, in the country. And I kind of just I felt a little stuck, but it was like, all right, I have to re-sign with this team, play another year. The goal was in the club was to promote, of course. So I'm not going to say the plan was like get noticed by a bigger, better team, but it just kind of worked out that way. I went back that summer and we didn't lose a game and promoted, and you know, everything was good. And then the Icelandic champions kind of came knocking for me, and it was just an opportunity I could not turn down.
Was it a difficult decision, kind of, just because I'm sure they wanted to re-sign you after an historic season like that, and to bring them up, but also know, like, in the end, we do a lot of things for the teams and clubs that we love, but we have to take the opportunities we think we deserve and can get.
Yeah, there's a, like, the communities in Iceland are built around the clubs. So like the neighborhood that I was in, I saw these kids all the time. I was coaching these kids, like, you know, love doing that. Like, you're just around the community a lot. They grew to know me, you know. I knew a lot of these kids that I was coaching, and there was just like a buzz around the club, because it was their first time in like 8 or 9 years. They are like a very historically big and like well-respected club, but it had been 8 or 9 years since they'd been in the top tier. So it was such an emotional time when we like promoted, in our last game. Oh man, they put the ad boards like, stay at Kyle Fram. So like
Oh,
like, they were
pulling on the heartstrings, man.
I know they were. Our like end of the season banquet was a tough one for me. Like, I hadn't made a decision at this point. Like, everybody knew that Vikinger, my current team, had come into the picture. But I can't even tell you, man, how many people came up to me at this banquet, pulled me for a chat, and were like, "Kyle, you have to stay here. My kid loves you. Like, they love watching you play. You're their favorite player." Like, you know, assistant coaches coming up to me, like board members, "Kyle, you got to stay here. Like, you know, we need you here." And like, it was such an emotional time, very tough time. Like, I was just getting kind of bombarded by like this love, which was great and in some aspects, but also like made my decision so much tougher. But then I went away, visited my friend in France, and kind of like stepped back a little, looked at it a little more objectively. Just compared the contracts, but like, you know, Champions League football, playing for the Icelandic champions, like,
so tough to pass up.
Yeah, it was like, it was a tough to pass up. And then my club actually made it even tougher, because I actually took the decision, funny enough, at a PSG game. I just saw Messi score like his first goal for PSG. And then I was like texting my agent, "I'm going to Vikinger."
I love that.
But I made the decision, came back to Iceland, and then had like 3 days before like a press conference to be announced, to sign and everything. And I get a text from like the technical director, I guess, in Fram. And they're like, "Hey, have you signed anything?" And I was like, "No. Why? Like, can you come in to the club?" And I was like, "Oh, man." And basically it's just like an hour and a half, like a very emotional conversation of like them trying to kind of sway me at this point. And then kind of in the end, financially threw some stuff at me, and like I had to go home, and I had like 24 hours, and it was like they, I'm not even gonna get into how much, but like enough to make me question this decision. Is like kind of what they bumped their offer up. And then I kind of went home, and I was like calling my mom, and I was like, "Mom, I don't even know what to do anymore." Like, you know, so yeah, I stuck with my gut, went to Vikinger, and like, you know, it's kind of history at this point. But it was such a tough.
Sure, yeah.
I can't even express.
Can't imagine.
Yeah, just being a part of this community, like feeling loved by everybody for like a year, and like, I'm not gonna say turning my back on them, but like, I had to take this step in my career. It was a natural progression, and like, but it just wasn't easy.
No.
At all.
No. Definitely not. And good, Kyle, reflecting on the journey now, what would you say helped you get to this moment where you are? So in other words, why did Kyle make it as a pro, and why is he still going?
Oh, why did I make it as a pro? Kind of the theme of just what I've said as I've gone through this episode, I've always just kept moving forward. I don't know, maybe that's just like a really simple way of putting it, but like any obstacle, I've kept pushing through it. I've always found a way to adapt, to adjust, and to conquer things. And I don't know what that is inside me, but it just keeps me moving. I'm not even gonna say it's like inner motivation or anything. Like, I just keep moving. But as for why I'm a professional, a lot has to do with my family, you know, how I grew up and the support they've given me. Like I said, after graduating and before going to Denmark, I had 6 months where my parents were just basically funding my lifestyle. Like, I was very blessed in that aspect of them, like pushing me, knowing when to push me, and also just like letting me figure things out and letting me kind of come to my own conclusion. So I think the way I was raised has a lot to do with where I am today, of course. Then what was the second bit?
Why are you still going?
Oh, why am I still going? Because I love football. I love being able to say I play football at this level. I love being able to be an athlete, a competitor at this level. And I just feel as though I can keep moving forward. I feel like I can keep moving up in my career. And, you know, as most athletes will tell you, they just want to reach the highest level they can. With each accomplishment, I put my sights further ahead. So that's why I'm still going. Maybe it's, in short, to prove things to myself. I don't think I'm proving anything to anyone else at this point, more to myself. But yeah, that's why I keep moving forward.
Love that.
Love it.
We're going to head into the fast feet round. Some quick fire questions to end off. We're going to start with favorite player growing up.
Either Lampard or Terry.
Chelsea guy.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Let's go. Favorite moment of football?
Favorite moment? Oh, man, it's supposed to be quick. Yeah, I'll say lifting the trophy, but also I played indoor back home, and playing in front of my friends and family was something else.
Hmm. So your dad had played for the club as well, right?
Yeah, correct.
That's kind of crazy, you passing down of the jersey. I'm sure that was a nice kind of emotional touch to it all.
Yeah, some good Christmas pictures from that one. But we actually had I had an instance where we played in a friendly, and my brother was actually on the other team, and then a bunch of friends and family. That was
that's awesome.
Cool. That was a cool moment.
How about most difficult moment?
The first 3 to 4 months in Denmark, I think. Yeah, kind of already hit on all the points there, but just a tough time.
Best advice you ever received?
Best advice I ever received. I think it's just, I don't know if it was ever like just a simple piece of advice or like somebody telling me this, but just learning to focus more on myself, not worry about what others thinking, and just, yeah, focus on yourself. Basically, keep your head down.
Best player you ever played with and against?
Oof. Okay, this is a tough one. With some of my teammates now are very good players. I'll say Pablo Puñed, El Salvadorian international. Just the way he, controls a game and the way he plays and his touch and everything is just unreal. I played with Mikkel Tugesen in Denmark. Played for many years in the Bundesliga, Mönchengladbach. I saw him a little bit towards the tail end of his career, but still saw the quality.
You can see it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another one, Nikolaj Wallis. He actually just got his first call up to the Danish national team. He went from, I think, the fourth tier in Iceland to the third tier, to the second tier, to the first tier, to the national team. So,
wow.
Yeah. He was, you could see the quality he had as well. And then against, I can't even think of his name. The striker in Poznan was a very good player. Then another winger, Velde, as well. He was very good. And then, yeah, in Denmark, we played against Nordsjælland in a winter friendly. And they had Mikkel Damsgaard, who I didn't even know at the time. He had like 27 on his back. We were playing against some youth guys, and I was like, who the hell is this guy? Then he dusted some of us. and then Sadiq as well. I think he's now in Haken. Those two stood out from Nordsjælland, but I think that's the list. Probably left people out, but
big names.
Yeah. If you weren't a footballer, what would you be?
Ooh, that's a good question. I didn't even look this far down on the list. I wasn't a footballer. I'd be a business tycoon.
Okay. No, a business tycoon.
I don't know. I want to be like, not want to be, I think I'd be like a good kind of like medical salesman where I'm set my own schedule on the road. I couldn't sit behind an office desk. So
yeah,
like a traveling salesman, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. The traveling salesman.
Yeah.
There you go. It's the name of the episode.
How about if you're a reader, do you have a favorite book?
I do. I think in recent times, it's The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F.
You can curse. Just another one.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, kind of just focusing on yourself and like also just picking what you want to care about and giving all of it, or giving all of yourself to that, basically.
Sure. And the last one, we kind of touched on it in the episode. Any quote or mantra that you live by?
Yeah, create your own luck. Yeah, it's kind of always been my motto. Like, you know, you're going to get lucky, but you have to create it with hard work, basically. And like I said, you know, at certain points where I got an opportunity and I got a little lucky in the opportunity, I was always ready to tackle the opportunity. So, yeah.
Traveling Salesman's good, but I like create your own luck for the for the title. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see which one we
let's go with that. With. Please don't make it Traveling Salesman.
No.
That's fair enough. Well, Kyle, we want to thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate your time and kind of diving through the story. And, you know, you being an open book with us, I think a lot of players and people outside of the game can take so much from this. And as you head into this next chapter and this next obstacle, you know, the mindset that you've had and the keep moving forward, we have no doubt will only lead you to further success. So we want to thank you again, man, and all the best.
I appreciate it. I can't believe I didn't say the toughest point in my career was my injury. I didn't even didn't cross my mind. But appreciate having you guys on. And, appreciate you having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Of course. And for those of you who will be listening on our podcast or on Kyle's, you know, this is the time where, you know, you can plug your own pod and make sure you guys check it out too.
Yeah, the Full 90 podcast, baby. Come check it out. I'm currently on a series where I'm talking about injuries. So if that's not your thing, maybe not. But I'll get into some more careers as well. So
love that, though. It's such a topic that everyone's going to have to deal with at some point. So exactly. I think that's amazing.
Appreciate All right. it.
Thank you, Kyle. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, again, special thanks to Kyle for coming on and sharing his story. I really liked how honest he kind of was in terms of the steps and the mental approaches that he took or and takes, you know, and kind of being open with us and, you know, our listeners that it's really not all sunshines and rainbows. And like a lot of this takes a lot of time and a lot of this you still will never perfect, and that these things come in waves. You know, and I think it's super important to kind of share that side of it as well, because a lot of us go through and get to these highs that, you know, we didn't think we'd go through, but we've also had these lows that no one sees or that only our inner circles kind of know. So it's good for me to kind of take those words too in periods of uncertainty or periods where things aren't going as well as you would think. And then just knowing where you can take it or where things can go and how you can deal with it, and just knowing, you know, as we said and as he said, which was nice, just keep moving forward and, you know, learning and sharing and knowing that it'll be good in the end and that you never know what's going to come from it.
Yeah. He has a great story. It's a classic, like overlooked. I mean, just walked on in college and then he played Champions League, Europa League qualifiers. I mean, it's kind of it. That is the story, right? It's the underdog story.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really love the point that we've spoken about before is like, but saying yes to opportunities or invites.
Agreed.
It's like, it's so important, and you might not want to do anything. You might want to just lay on the couch and watch Netflix or whatever it is, but like nothing good is going to come out of, or nothing like eye-opening or like an amazing experience that you remember forever is never going to happen in that situation. You got to leave the apartment. That's kind of the gist of it, of what this person on this podcast said was like, wherever you're staying in your hotel or in your room, like nothing good is going to happen there. Nothing that you're going to remember. Like you need to go out. And if someone's inviting you, especially a local, like just go, because you're going to probably experience something that you might not be able to see as just a tourist. Like you need a local to show you the cool spot or whatever, you know? And I think we've both really realized that. And every time you meet new people or put in that situation, it's like, you're so happy that you went through with it.
Yeah. It's so easy. You can sit and tell people to like work on mental things and meditation and things like that. But when you're kind of like stuck in a place in your home and you're just thinking about it, like it's very tough to even like do those things that will take you completely out of it. Like sometimes you just have to take a jump outside. And then, you know, you're still thinking about it maybe in the first minutes, but then you come out of it and then it wasn't there. And then that makes it easier to deal with like the next times. I think that cycle of it is, I completely agree. And hearing like, you know, how you said it, like I was very similar ways in a lot of contracts that I've had in the beginning. You kind of just say no to a lot of things. And, you know, sometimes you need to say no because you know how you have to prepare. But sure. Most of the time it's just like, say yes. Even if it's a little uncomfortable at first, say yes. Even if it's, you know, doing something that you don't know or talking to people you don't know, because in the end of it, you're always going to come out feeling like, yeah, I'm glad I did that. And I got out of thinking about the game for a little bit. And I think that's so important.
Right. That, I mean, that's a perfect way to put it. It's like, you might spend all this time, oh, I need to meditate or I need to watch the game to get out of it. But actually it turns out the best thing is to like distract yourself completely with doing something enjoyable. And then when you're finished with that, say you're sitting on the train going home, you can then reflect like, okay, the emotion's kind of gone.
Exactly.
I can look at it just analytically. Okay, I did this, I could do this better, but I did this really well. And you move on.
Because you've brought yourself back to that like exactly, almost equal level. And I think that's the best time for reflection is when you can kind of, and obviously it's very tough to bring yourself back to that balance, but when you can try and do those things, those little tricks, that's the easiest time to reflect and then think about, okay, what's the next step? Okay, was it really, did I really play this bad? Okay, you know, what's next from here? Next, what's the next step forward? What's the putting my next foot forward?
Exactly.
What a story though, man. I mean, playing in the highs, winning Icelandic Cups, you know, taking it to heights that many people probably didn't see, and you know, always having the determination to take the next step and to push himself. You know, there's been a lot of difficulties. He's going through one right now with injuries. And yeah, I implore all of you to kind of go and listen to him and the Injury Chronicles, where he's talking to guests and things about these topics, because yeah, you may get something from this and the injuries, but you know, there's always different ways that people look at it and different strategies, and those ways might help you. So yeah, again, just appreciative to him and his story and coming on and, you know, I'm excited to see him conquer this next step.
Exactly. And then with that free support always helps.
Yeah, take a step for us. Take a step for us.
There you
go. Like something, subscribe to the newsletter. There will be a newsletter going out very soon with some new information. All that stuff helps. All that stuff helps us share more stories. All those things help us get in touch with you guys and the next crop and generation of footballers and people outside of football too. So, you know, we're appreciative of the love and support. And if you can, you know, just give a little time for those clicks. That's how the world's running these days. So please.
That's right. Until next time.
Keep moving forward.
Keep learning.
And make your own path.
I like how you emphasize keep moving forward.
Hey, he said it a few times today, too. Huh? We had to. Yeah.
I always smile when they say that.
Like, haha. Like it's when they mentioned the movie title.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Footwork is sponsored by ourselves and great companies such as Kong Fitness. But we love to partner with new brands to make their own path, so get in touch if you must.
Footwork.club, the official footwork website, is now live, so make sure you go join the club and check out all the new content and all the new features. Find us on YouTube at Footwork Podcast. You better like and subscribe while you're there. If not, I don't know what to tell you.
Find us on Instagram at Footwork_podcast. Great time there. Twitter at Footwork Podcast. TikTok at Footwork Podcast, where we like to post dance videos. Those are great, but more importantly, amazing content for any dream chasers out there. Plug pass. Tell your friends, your enemies, your mother, your brother, your sister, your pastor, it doesn't matter who. Tell the mailman, your dog, anybody that can listen.
Like, subscribe, review, because all of that helps while you're there. We'll take whatever we can get to join the club.
Join the club. He messed me up. I mean, he can just mash it together, so it's fine.